And welcome back to our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today from the Barnes Foundation, we have its Deputy Director for Research, Interpretation, and Education, Martha Lucy. Martha, welcome.
Thanks, Laura.
And you know what? You're going to educate me today, because I think we all know the Barnes name, but now we need to know the Barnes, the man, and Barnes, the education institution there. So do you want to give us first that speed date? What is the Barnes Foundation? And then let's talk about Albert Barnes.
Sure. The Barnes Foundation is an art collection and educational institution. And it started out as the private collection of Albert Barnes, and I can tell you more about him later. But he was collecting all this incredible modern art at a time when nobody else really was, and he amassed this unbelievable collection of works by Matisse, Picasso, Renoir, Cezanne, Modigliani, you know, important African sculpture. And he eventually, around 1922, decided to devote his whole collection to teaching and educational purposes. So he chartered the Barnes Foundation in Marion, and it opened in 1925. And he had really specific ideas about education. I mean, how it should be done, how you talk about art, how you look at art. But I think what's probably the most important thing is that he really believed in democracy, and that art should not just be for the elite and for, you know, sort of people in the know and people with money and people with very advanced educations. He wanted art to be for everyone. And so his classes, he opened up his collection to classes which he taught himself, and he had some other teachers teaching them too. And the only people who could come in to see his collection for the first several decades were people who had signed up to teach his classes or to take his classes. And they were, you know, people with very little background in art. That's who he was interested in reaching. And so his original building, his original school, his original collection, all of this was out in Marion, in the suburbs. And in 2012, the whole collection, the whole institution moved to Center City, Philadelphia.
And of course, we all know that when it moved into a facility that replicated as exactly as possible the original building, even down to the ambient light that comes through the fake windows. It looks, if you went to the original one, you're in the original one today when you come there, because it isn't the whole purpose of this. You're applying what he's teaching to art from now on. It's a way, yes, of seeing art.
Yes. I mean, there's a lot in what you just said, all of that.
Parse it down for the next,
okay,
25 minutes. But you know what? I, yes, got ahead of myself there. Who was Barnes? I mean, the man, he was a chemist, was he not? I mean, how did he come to art, and how did he become so, well, opinionated, or how did he, yeah, develop this method?
He was very opinionated. He was he's a fascinating person. He was a chemist. He was born in a pretty poor neighborhood in South Philadelphia, and then spent part of his childhood in Kensington. He went to Central High School. He then went to the University of Pennsylvania and got a medical degree. And then he developed a drug called Argyrol, which was a silver nitrate compound, and he patented it with a partner. And by age, I don't know, 30, he was wealthy. He was very, very wealthy. And he ran his company, but he was fascinated by art, and I think he didn't really understand it, mm-hmm, at first. I think he's a scientist, and scientists want to understand things and be able to have, you know, get answers. And he would look at art, and there, all of this stuff is in his letters. He would look at art, and he would say, why, to his friends, why is this a good painting? Explain to me why this is a good painting. And he would sort of harass people for answers and opinions. So it was really important for him to be able to talk about art in an honest way. He didn't go in for the kind of jargon of the art establishment. So he started collecting And it was really out of curiosity. I don't think he was collecting as an investment, at least not at first. It was something that he just was interested in and wanted to understand. And as I said before, you know, eventually he turned this personal fascination into this, you know, desire to educate others and to kind of share his fascination with others.
And he was doing it, of course, at a fascinating time when art is changing so drastically.
Yeah.
And you're getting all these new schools and new artists stepping up. And he didn't invest in the tried and true. He was buying, and that was through his schoolmate, Glackens, right?
Right.
And he was buying stuff by artists no one had heard of at that point.
Yes. It's kind of hard to imagine now because so many of the artists that he has in his collection are names that are really familiar to us, like Renoir. He's got 181 Renoirs, which is the biggest collection in the world, and he's got Matisse and Picasso. But that's really important, I think, to remember that when he was collecting these artists, some of them were unknown in the U.S., but if they were known, like, say, Cézanne or Renoir, they were not really accepted as good artists. They were thought to be too radical, too modern. You know, critics said, oh, these artists are disrespecting tradition and this is the downfall of civilization. I mean, I'm not even exaggerating. This is the kind of stuff that you find in the criticism and in the reviews from like the 1910s. And when there are these amazing newspaper clippings in our archives from 1922 when Barnes first chartered the foundation, one of them describes him as the madman in Marion. And another one calls the Barnes Foundation America's $6 million shrine for all the craziest art. So they thought that the artists that he was collecting were crazy people and that he was crazy for collecting them. So he was really, you know, sort of pushing the envelope and was kind of ahead of his time.
Well, now, when I mentioned that when you go to the museum now, it looks exactly as it did.
Mm-hmm.
When he left it, when he walked out the door the last time, it looks exactly the same. And so here I'm going to combine a couple of thoughts here. You mentioned jargon, but he had method, ensembles, context or the jargon in his approach to it. If you looked at it 25 years ago and you walked in today, the ensembles would be the same because it was important to him, these terms.
Right.
Jump in there and wrestle
yeah.
that to the ground. I'm just
yeah.
throwing out these ideas.
I'll try. Okay. Now, these are all like the really key ideas. So the ensembles that you mentioned, these are the groupings that he made of his collection. So each wall in the collection is very dense with works of art and, you know, not just paintings, but metalworks. You know, hinges are on the walls. There's furniture. In front of the wall, there are, you know, vases, and all of these things go together and create what he called an ensemble. And he made these ensembles himself, and he worked really hard on them. And he would, like, get up in the middle of the night and rearrange and rethink his ensembles. And so when he died in 1951, and I'll get into sort of what these ensembles are about in a minute, but when he died in 1951... they were all photographed, so we know exactly what they looked like when he died. We have records. When the collection moved downtown, the building, the galleries that the art was hung in were, as you say, were replicated. So the space is exactly the same, and the ensembles were hung exactly as he left them. I mean, down to the millimeter. And it was really important for us to do that. It's a very strange and kind of quirky and fun and beautiful way of hanging the art. So where in most museums you'll go in and an art collection will be arranged historically or kind of chronologically. Like you'll have the American artists in one place mm-hmm. and the Italian Renaissance somewhere else and the decorative art somewhere else. Barnes kind of got rid of historical categories and put everything together. So one of his ensembles, it's not just a group of modern French paintings. Some of them are. But others, you'll have modern French paintings with ancient Chinese sculpture and Navajo jewelry and Navajo textiles and Renaissance painting, and everything's mixed together. And he did this for many reasons. I think one of them, he liked to buck convention. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to. He was not a rule follower. You know, he didn't care what other museums were doing. But the really sort of philosophical kind of underpinning of his installation had to do with this idea of democracy and art being for everyone, because he, you know, these things from different time periods and different cultures, they're not just haphazardly put up there. They are, it's all based on formal connections, so visual similarities. So you might have a Renaissance portrait of somebody next to a modern Matisse portrait, and what he's trying to do is get you to see the sort of formal similarities between these works of art. Maybe it's color, maybe it's the use of line, maybe it's the use of light. And in his theory, in his method, this is an easier way to sort of get into a work of art just by looking at form than trying to talk about history and historical context. It's a much more kind of democratic approach. It doesn't require any real advanced education. You don't have to know about classical art. You don't have to know about history or literature. You just have to have your eyes, and you just have to look. You have to use your eyes.
And it's the relationship between things.
Yes.
So it might be a Modigliani next to an African effigy, next
yes.
to a pitchfork that, or an Indian totem to show that the outline, or it's all in the context, but it's the relationship between the that you're looking for here.
It's all about the relationships, and it's so you'll find things together that you wouldn't find anywhere else. Like you will, you'll find a Modigliani next to a spatula, and these things have no, you know, historical connection to each other. But he's saying, like, look at how the line is used in this utensil. Much like it is used in this 20th century painting by Modigliani.
Now, and I might be remembering this wrong, but I remember the very first time I went in, there was a pitchfork, and it was hung on the wall with the three prongs, you know, sticking up, and there were three lines in the picture, and the guide was telling us that we're trying look at these vertical lines in here and how it pulls the whole piece together. And in that was, to me, what I walked away with in the method, and that's probably really just simplistic as heck, but
that's it.
Is that the famous method with the capital M?
It's really looking, yes. It's not just about, you know, those lines that you mentioned, but that's part of it. It's about relationships, and it's about purely visual relationships. So yeah, you would look at the works of art in a particular grouping and try to figure out why. It's sort of a game in some ways. Why are these together?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what does this bowl on this table here have to do with this Renoir painting hanging above it? What's similar about them? And in that exercise really kind of forces you to like really look and use your eyes and use your sort of analytical skills. And you come out of it without even sort of realizing it with sharper visual skills that you can then sort of bring to looking at everything, not just art.
And it's something to teach you for going from then on forward. And you know what? We're at the halfway point, and here's where I say that we are talking to Martha Lucy, who is the Deputy Director for Research, Interpretation, and Education. That's a mouthful.
Yes.
That's a big business card at the Barnes Foundation. And for more information, go to barnesfoundation.org. That's barnesfoundation.org. You'll find everything from, you know what, where are you located?
We're at 2025 Benjamin Franklin Parkway.
And you are open every day of the week? So
we're open every day except Tuesdays.
So that is Wednesdays through Sundays.
Through Mondays.
And of course, if you are just joining us, you are listening to Our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis. BarnesFoundation.org, the place to go for all the information about the Barnes Foundation, a beautiful museum at 2025 the Benjamin Franklin Parkway, right in the heart of Center City, Philadelphia. BarnesFoundation.org. This is something that, again, education is the important part of this. It's not just a fabulous collection to go and just enjoy for the moment. It's to take it away and have an appreciation of art for the rest of your life. And so that means education is still a major part of the Barnes Foundation, is it not?
Oh, yes. Yes. That's crucial. I think it's more a part of the Barnes Foundation than ever. So I think that I think that Albert Barnes would really be happy with the way that we're carrying out his mission, because we have expanded the number of classes that we offer for adults. We've really vastly expanded that in the last couple of years. We give scholarships for people who want to take these classes. There are three or four scholarships per class. And we also now reach about 11,000 school groups, 11,000 students from Philadelphia schools every year. And this was something that the Barnes was not able to do when it was out in Marion, and that Albert Barnes himself really didn't do. But now that we're in this new facility, we have a lot more space, and we can accommodate school groups. So that's amazing to see, you know, these little 6-year-olds going through the collection and saying hilarious things about the art.
Now, and I know that serious art students, people who are going to make art their career and their life, will come for classes for credit, for college credit, et cetera. But who else should be thinking, hey, why not enrich my life a little bit with a class here? When you mentioned the adults coming there, who's taking these classes and what are the classes about?
So the classes are for anybody who wants to take them. You can have a lot of knowledge about the history of art or none at all, and you can come and you will get something out of it. Some of the classes take place in the galleries, so you'll be sitting in the middle of all these masterpieces, learning according to that original Barnes method. So about maybe a third of our classes are conducted in that way, where it's really just a focus on very close looking and formal analysis. We also have a number of classes that look at materials. So we have a class right now that is analyzing impressionist techniques. We've got one in the spring coming up that looks at early photographic techniques. We've had classes looking at, you know, how sculpture is made. And then we've got another, probably the majority of our classes are sort of like what you would take in a college course. But on a very introductory level. Some of them are 14 weeks, some of them are 4 weeks long, and we've really just expanded the topics in the last couple of years to include topics that aren't even related to our collection necessarily. So we were offering in the spring a course on surrealism, for example.
And of course, this building does make this a lot more possible now, because before you were limited to that space,
right?
And now you do have classrooms, and you have theater space, like where you can come in and hit with the lectures, et cetera.
Exactly. Yeah, it allows us to do so much more. So for a class like surrealism, or an introduction to contemporary art, we use a lot of faculty from the area, so professors from the University of Pennsylvania or Moore College of Art, and we hold them, some of them, in the auditorium. So people will be learning from slides. But as I say, we also have this other sort of array of classes that takes the smaller ones that take place in the galleries.
And that does mean, too, that you can now do special exhibits that you weren't able to before.
Right. Now, that's really exciting because it means that we have a special exhibition space. We did not have that in Marion. And now we get to, you know, three times a year, bring a whole bunch of new art into the building. And it really kind of enlivens the collection. Most of the exhibitions are related somehow to the permanent collection. And right now we've got Berthe Morisot. She was a woman impressionist, just an amazing, amazing painter who really hasn't gotten her due in the history of art. But I think we're now really looking at her seriously. And what we try to do when we have a special exhibition is develop classes that we develop several classes that are related to that show. So we had a few classes this past semester on Morisot. This spring we have an exhibition coming up on early photography. Photography between 1840 and 1870. So we're offering a class on the history of photography. So if you don't have to know anything about art or photography to take this class, you can come and learn, and then it'll make going to the exhibition that much more interesting. This summer we have an exhibition on Bill Viola, who is a very important video artist. And so we're offering classes on the history of video art to kind of go along with that.
How would Barnes, what do you think Barnes would think of that?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think it's really hard to say whether Barnes would have been interested in video art. But considering the fact that he was always interested in the kind of art that was pushing the boundaries and the kind of art that was contemporary, you know, I think he would have taken a serious look at it.
I think context, he probably would have.
Yeah.
With that relationship there. So what is the takeaway here? If I'm just walking through the door and I haven't had a class yet, when I come through the door, what is the best way to see the collection?
Okay, so when you come through the door, there are lots of different ways you can do it. You can just go in and kind of wander around and just sort of explore and kind of just be overwhelmed and sort of full of wonder. We also offer docent tours several times a day that'll kind of take you on a tour of the highlights of the collection. We also offer tours that change every month. They're called spotlight tours, where it'll focus on a specific artist. So say you want to just learn about Cézanne. During certain months, we offer tours of Cézanne, and it'll take you through and talk about all the Cézannes in the collection. But then, of course, there are these classes that I'm talking about, and that's a more immersive experience. And, we have professional art historians and artists and conservators teaching these classes. I should emphasize that they are very accessible, and that you really don't need to have a background in art in order to take these classes. But even if you do, you're still going to learn something. And you're going to be looking really closely, and you're going to come out with a better appreciation of the Barnes collection and of art in general.
And classes go 4 to 14 weeks.
Yeah, so a handful of them run for 14 weeks, but most of them are what we call short courses. They run for 4 weeks. So once every, four classes over the course of 4 weeks, each class is 2 hours. We cut our prices in the last maybe 3 years ago to make them more affordable. And then to make them even more affordable still, we began offering scholarships. And that's a really important part of carrying out Barnes's mission. We don't just want, the people who can afford to be paying for these classes to learn about art. We want people who don't necessarily have the means or who have never really thought about art before to come in and join the conversation. We try to be very welcoming and make everybody feel at home. And we find that a lot of the students become really invested in the Barnes. They feel like, you know, it becomes kind of a home for them.
And of course, I alluded to it, and I think you've mentioned it a few times. This is something that helps you look at art and other things for the rest of your life. So I can understand why maybe getting the kids and the increased outreach programs that you offered are so important.
Yes, we want to make art into something that's not so mysterious for these kids. And a lot of the kids that come to the Barnes through these grant-funded programs, you know, a lot of them might never have, certainly have not come to a museum before. And who knows when they would ever get the chance to go to a museum. And so one of our goals in bringing in so many school students, from especially students from underserved communities, is to introduce them to art, of course, but to also make them feel comfortable in this kind of setting, in an art museum. It can be intimidating, and it's hard. I think museums have a hard time kind of shedding this idea that they are for the privileged and for the elite, and that's not what we want to be about. We want the Barnes to be for everyone. We want people to come. We want people to come back, including kids. We want these school kids to come and then come back with their families. And we actually offer passes for school kids who do visit through our grant-funded programs to come back with their families. You know, it's also, we think that the kind of looking that you do when you come to the Barnes and the kind of critical thinking that adults do and that children do when they're learning in these galleries can really be applied to other areas of life too. So we have really interesting lessons that connect art and science and math. And we have these K-12 classes are very much integrated with curriculum of the school district.
And of course, you have memberships, you have guided tours, you have a wonderful gift shop, you have free Sundays.
The first Sunday of every month is free all day, and we have special programming that happens on those days. You can come and see the collection, but there might also be some sort of dance performance happening or some special lecture in the auditorium. So it's a very dynamic place. We also have lectures and concerts and sometimes films that happen, not just on Sundays, but all the time. There's always something going on.
And of course, all of that is at your website,
barnesfoundation.org.
And it is a fabulous website because it has information about all the programs that she's been mentioning there, everything from the toddler times to the screenings, the talks, the hours, etc., and information about the scholarships, which are really very good.
Yeah, and if you are low income, you can take a class for free at the Barnes. You just have to go to the website and go to the tab that says take a class. And you'll see that there's a scholarship application that you can fill out. It's pretty easy to do.
And that is, of course, barnesfoundation.org. And my guest today, Martha Lucy, Deputy Director for Research, Interpretation, and Education at the Barnes Foundation. Martha, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.